Welcome to Streaming Into the Void, where we discuss all the streaming news for the week ending April 19th, 2024. I'm Kim Hollis, gloating Chicago Bulls fan for one game, but not two. With me are Tim Bridie, content creator and gamer, tenured professor at the Tortured Poets Department. Congrats.
This actually has nothing to do with Taylor Swift. It's just a coincidence.
Oh, awesome. Also, David Mumpower, author of Behind the Ride, streaming media analyst, and over the 2024 Atlanta Hawks.
A modest proposal? Play defense!
In the NBA? Is that allowed?
And the podcast is produced and edited by Raul Burial, who's annoyed that the defendant in his trial keeps farting.
I liked it better when he was just dozing off.
This week, there's turmoil in Hollywood while Netflix continues to assert its dominance. Apollo Global Management may have just thrown a wrench in David Ellison's efforts to merge his Skydance studio with Paramount, as it was reported on Thursday by the New York Times that Sony may be backing the Apollo bid.
Let's be clear, this is one report based on information that there may be talks underway between Apollo Global and Sony. Nothing else substantial has been indicated, but it does cast the Apollo Global management bid on Paramount in an entirely new light. My impression all along for the Apollo Global bid was that if it were to materialize, it was going to result in Paramount getting shredded, broken up into parts, and all its assets sold off. That is generally what happens when a company like this buys another company.
Yeah, and as a refresher, basically what happened was when the bidding started, Apollo wrote something in crayon on a sheet of paper that said, "We pay you $26 billion. Paramount officials didn't even know what to do with it because it was so unserious as an offer that, you know, they looked at it and they just laughed and went, well, what are we supposed to do with that? Skydance had, you know, like legal paperwork ready to go and they were willing to make a deal. Now, Apollo is looking at Skydance's exclusive bidding window, which is a full month they've got. We're in week two of it. By the time you listen to this, it might be week three. And so they've got plenty of runway left to make a deal. And Apollo, Raul, they just seem to be trying to mess with that, don't they? To say, wait, before you do that, we can write it in something better than crayon. Pencil, maybe, possibly even ink.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack about the potential of Sony being involved in the bid for what is another Hollywood studio. This would, without a doubt, invite scrutiny from the United States Department of Justice in terms of antitrust concerns. Sony does not get to buy Paramount, or Sony doesn't get to participate in the buyout of Paramount without it having to jump through a whole lot of hoops. So you really have to wonder what Sony is thinking here. What is their game? I don't really get it, but the fact of the matter is that if Sony were to buy Paramount, the likelihood that Paramount was just going to be broken up into parts, it's less likely to happen. But I just don't see it materializing. But if it did, boy, wouldn't it be funny if Sony owned the studio that was producing the series based on Microsoft's Halo. This is Sony essentially poking Microsoft in the eye, saying, look what we can do. And honestly, I think this feels very much like an invitation to bring other bidders into the Paramount bidding war right now.
Right. We've seen this before. We've actually seen this before fairly recently. And that was when Disney made an offer in the $50 billion range for the assets at Fox. Well, a different competitor, Comcast, looked at that and went, whoa, that is way too cheap for that. We cannot let you establishing dominance in the marketplace by getting that deal at that price. So Comcast comes in with a better bid. Disney eventually tops that bid, but Comcast did achieve its goal of making Disney pay, you know, I forget the exact number, but it was like $20 billion more. I think it was $17 billion more than they'd anticipated, which has hurt Disney some. That was the goal here. Disney then turned around and did the same thing to Comcast with Sky. This is what corporations do to make sure nobody gets too big a lead in market share in the marketplace or too much IP, both of which are pressing concerns. We're seeing this now where Sony is looking at what could happen and going, wait a minute, we've been on the outside looking in. And Raul and I keep having this debate. Raul thinks Sony has the perfect strategy of being a hired gun that sells its content to the highest bidder and makes the most money in the short term. That is absolutely correct with the key phrase of in the short term. It is not a winning play long term. And I've said that on this podcast several times. At some point, you have to get in the game. This would put Sony in the game, but I cannot stress this enough. Even in the New York Times piece that broke this story, there was no commitment whatsoever. There was basically, we've got our fingers crossed, maybe, just maybe we'll do this. It was, don't make the deal with Skydance and nothing else.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I just don't see the benefit to Sony. Here, David points out how Sony's been the hired gun, basically selling off their TV series and their movies to Netflix or any other higher bidder that may be coming along. And they've apparently have been very happy with that. It seems to be a very successful strategy for them, so much so that they do not want to get into the streaming wars. They had a streaming service some years ago and they got rid of it. They sold it off. For them to now buy into Paramount would give them a streaming service. It would give them linear television channels like CBS. It would give them linear cable channels like BET, MTV, Nickelodeon. What does Sony think they're doing by getting into this? This is entirely contrary to their strategy for all these years. And I still feel that a lot of this is just legacy assets that nobody really wants. So why would Sony want to buy into this? It doesn't make sense other than to maybe make sure that the Skydance bid for Paramount is all on the up and up and it keeps everybody honest and that everybody ends up paying the right price. And as David pointed out, implying that maybe Skydance ends up having to pay just a little bit more and doesn't give anybody too much of a lead in the Hollywood studio wars.
The other thing I want to throw in here, just when you look at this from the Meta perspective, we were saying a month ago that we're in the wait and see mode where we want to find out what happens next. Well, Skydance is saying if we get Paramount, we want to merge with somebody. Sony is saying on second thought, it's not the worst idea for us to have a streaming company. Those things we've been waiting to happen suddenly have hit the gas as hard as they can. And so it's going to be an exciting month.
Meanwhile, the 2023 pay package for Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav was reported this week. His pay was up more than 25% over 2022 to nearly $50 million.
So you get paid a lot of money if you're really bad at your job? I need to rethink things.
Is there anyone out there still giving Zaslav the benefit of the doubt? His entire tenure at the studio has been designed to better himself at the expense of everyone and everything else. What more proof do we need?
Yeah, Kim and I were talking about this before the podcast, and, you know, she was like, you're getting angry. And I was. And that's because I have friends who are affected by these things. The reality is we have talked about movies that have been killed. We're talking about an $80 million production of Batgirl. We are talking about the Looney Tunes film. We are talking about things that if you add the totals of them together, it is hundreds of millions of dollars of assets destroyed so that one guy can get $20 million more on his paycheck. If you want to know what's wrong with the corporate world and what's wrong with Hollywood, that is your textbook example right there. That shouldn't be possible. And everyone listening to this knows it is fundamentally wrong. And yet he did it, and he did it with very little pushback.
Yeah, we can roll out a parade of disasters and lay them at the feet of David Zaslav, not the least of which is the diminishing value of what was once the paragon of linear broadcasting, HBO. HBO at this point has become a laughingstock compared to what it was even 5 years ago. But really, one thing you have to look at here is how Warner Bros. Discovery has screwed up their negotiations for NBA broadcast rights. The exclusive negotiation window for those rights with the NBA has expired without any agreement between Warner Bros. Discovery and the NBA. The rights now are going to go to whoever is the highest bidder. And without those rights, sports broadcasting at Warner Bros. Discovery is pretty much DOA.
Yeah, Raul is more doom and gloom on this than I am. And I know that Kim and I were raving a few days ago about how exceptional the broadcast was when the Warner's division handled March Madness. It's the gold standard. It's as good as it can be. They're not going to throw away that golden goose. What they're trying to do is show some cost constraint here, and that's what that is. And obviously, we shouldn't be surprised by that when David Zaslav does it. Even if he weren't the one behind the wheel, this would still be happening, because the reality is there are outside parties who would like to throw a lot of money at the NBA, and the NBA would like to accept that money. So these exclusive bidding windows had to close so that the other parties could come in. And I believe that there is an understanding with ESPN, with Warner Brothers Discovery, TNT, TBS, where everyone is aware of the fact that the NBA wanted to make more money, and the best way to do that is to share more. And so they are going to broadcast fewer games with this upcoming contract, but I fully expect that the same two major broadcast partners to continue in some form of agreement. And I suspect that there is already a deal that has been made behind the scenes, and we're just waiting to find out whether, you know, Apple or Amazon comes in, or possibly even Google, and buys a little piece of it. I don't think the broad strokes are going to change much. And the reason why I say that is Warner Brothers Discovery has extended the contracts of the people like Charles Barkley into the 2030s. They wouldn't do that if they were going to lose NBA rights entirely.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the NBA looking to split the pie up into finer slices, although we've seen this with Major League Baseball, where that league has split up their rights across multiple different broadcast partners. And I think the losers here are the fans. And if that's what's going to happen here with the NBA, I would argue that's bad news for basketball fans as well.
But all this news paled in comparison to Netflix's quarterly earnings report. It was another banner quarter for Netflix as they added 9.33 million subscribers, while analysts estimated they'd add only 3.93 million. Wow.
So the account sharing crackdown worked?
God. This is a lot more than just them cracking down on password sharing. Oh my God. Netflix beat estimates across the board. Their earnings per share were $5.28 based on $9.37 billion in revenue. And that's compared to an estimate of $4.26 per share on $8.73 billion in revenue. That is an increase of 15% over the same quarter last year. To bring all this home, Netflix's income for this quarter was $2.3 billion. And their free cash flow was $2.13 billion. Or to frame it another way, Netflix spent $7 billion in Q1 of 2024 and still had $2 billion left over.
Is the increase in revenue mainly because now we have ads and we didn't last year?
Largely, Netflix is saying that they're still not making a lot of revenue from ads. They continue to push their ad tiers as an alternative, as a preferred alternative. But $2 billion in free cash flow does not reflect subscribers on an ad tier. No, this is just a lot more subscribers deciding that Netflix is the streaming service they want.
Yeah, and to the point about the password crackdown, we know that's one of the reasons why. We know that that is a huge factor on the bottom line, because Netflix, while taking its victory lap, quietly whispered nowhere near a microphone, "We're going to stop announcing subscribers next year." That's something they've done before, and it is a tactic, and that tactic is we've already sketched out what we expect the subscribers to look like, and we're going to quit doing it before they start downturning again, because we know from experience Wall Street doesn't like that. So they're only going to announce numbers when it helps them. We have already heard that Disney has announced a date for its pass-down sharing crackdown. Warner Brothers Discovery is going to do it as well. There is a model in play now. People have looked at the prototype. They have seen how much it has helped Netflix. But I am curious for your opinions about whether or not the other streaming services will be as successful, or whether this is just people need Netflix.
There is just so much more original content and now even library content on Netflix compared to the other streamers that, I mean, we've said it before, the studies and the analysis have said it for years, that when it comes to streaming, it's always Netflix and something else. Netflix is your baseline when it comes to streaming. Everybody gets Netflix. And Netflix really honestly is not done. They're not done adding subscribers. They're not done with original content. They're not done flexing as they announce that new seasons of powerhouse shows like Squid Game, Night Agent, Cobra Kai, Emily in Paris, Outer Banks, and the Ryan Murphy anthology Monster will be coming in the second half of 2024. So all of that's happening before they stop announcing new subscriber numbers. So watch for even more impressive quarterly earnings from Netflix to come.
Yeah, it's the library for Netflix. At this point, it's like, if it's not on Netflix, just wait, and it might be someday if you are a show that's currently on, say, Max or even Hulu. Netflix is just the first thing people think of. I don't need anything else. I just need Netflix. And then they put it on in the background, and that's why we're here.
Yeah, unfortunately, most streaming services are basically programming themselves into irrelevance. When you have a streaming service like Max that has original shows like the upcoming season of Hacks, that's great for right now, and that'll get you subscribers for like a month, but then within a few more months, you can almost certainly guarantee that that show is going to end up on Netflix. So it really begs the question why anyone would bother subscribing to streaming services like Max when inevitably those shows are going to land on Netflix. And just one follow-up based on something we were discussing last week, as Netflix co-CEO Ted Sarandos shut down speculation that Dan Lin's tenure as the film boss at Netflix would mark a change in the streamer's movie strategy. Sarandos says that there is no change. Netflix is full speed ahead on their movie strategy. So I guess we could expect a lot more movies with that Netflix sheen.
I had to laugh at this one because it really felt like him saying, oh no, everything I'm talking about right now is a win. Don't you tell me that we're going to change anything with our films right now. Never. I stand behind every nonsensical decision we've made. And that means we're going to give Zack Snyder 27 more movies. Stop us if you can.
Zack Snyder has indeed threatened to make more Rebel Moon movies. So please, someone please stop him.
Didn't he say like 9? I mean, it's like a comically large number too.
Yeah.
Please meet his demands, whatever it takes to not make more. All right, Tim, let's move on to the ratings. I bet there's a bunch of Netflix on there.
Do you think? Yeah, we're going to table box office for this week. I'll just throw out that your top movie on Friday for this weekend is Abigail with $4 million, and that's all I really need to say about that. So yeah, we're looking at the Nielsen streaming ratings for Monday, March 18th to Sunday, March 24th, 2024. And to not really much of a surprise, the top show of the week on the original chart is Three Body Problem, 1.3 billion minutes for 8 episodes after arriving on the 21st. So yeah, just for the weekend, we figured this was going to be huge, and I'm curious to see what happens because it's very confusing and it didn't get glowing reception. It got, you know, middling to positive, but it's the hard sci-fi, and I wonder if people are going to stick with it.
So Tim, knowing that it's like the most expensive Netflix broadcast in ages, is this a good enough number to justify a second season in your opinion?
I feel like they probably will go ahead and do it. Of course, they have, you know, Netflix now has a month more data than we're talking about here, and it has not gotten a renewal yet. So I'm wondering what they're waiting for. It's only one book, right? It's not a book series.
There's 3 books in the series.
Oh, okay. I did not know it was a series. Okay, so then there is more to it that could possibly be adapted, because I'm wondering if it was just the book turned into the show, but okay.
No, yeah. As a matter of fact, without doing spoilers, they actually pulled from the second and third books in the first season. So they're kind of picking and choosing the things they think work the best.
So I'm curious if then the showmakers wondered if they were not going to, might as well do it just in case we don't get a second season. I want to see what happens next week with the full week, but 1 billion minutes is still nothing to sneeze at. This is fine. I mean, not everything could be a Stranger Things or a Wednesday, but not everything can be that. So yeah, I would expect it to get a second season. Also new in second is Homicide New York, 1 billion minutes for 5 episodes. This is basically Dick Wolf's real life Law and Order documentary series on true crime, rather than, you know, all the fake crimes that happen on the Law and Order shows. This docuseries that premiered on March 20th. So we kind of figured it would be there, but you know, it's true crime. It's a documentary. Yeah, these things always seem to do well. Also from Netflix and third, The Gentlemen, the top show last week, 971 million minutes. While Love is Blind, after its finale is finally complete, down to 617 million minutes in fourth, 483 total episodes. Maybe one more week, and then we'll surely see it again in the fall when the next season comes out. Hulu Shogun is up to fifth with five episodes, 423 million minutes. So it's kind of plateauing after the start, but I feel like that's common with the, you know, the shows that aren't on Netflix that release weekly, you know, and then it'll just see a gradual increase. And then I think a nice little jump at the end, because there's still several more episodes to go, at least through the next month. From Peacock, we saw this last week. Apples Never Fall is still here in six, 399 million minutes for its seven episode season. Good on that for hanging on one more week. Turning Point, The Bomb in the Cold War. We also saw that last week. Docuseries from Netflix, 378 million minutes. Avatar, The Last Airbender, 365 million minutes in eighth. Returning in ninth, well, sort of. Physical 100 Underground, 328 million minutes viewed for seven episodes. So this is the second season of the Korean show Physical 100. Not quite a real life Squid Game because they're not killing people, but it is a endurance challenge. First season we saw in January of 2023. And then here, the second season released on March 19th with actually, they staggered it, which again, Netflix will do with their reality shows. So this is actually only the first four episodes. So actually Nielsen has the information wrong. There's actually only four episodes here. This number is pretty good. And I expect to see it then rise as it adds episodes. And because of the naming, the first season was just called Physical 100. The second one, Physical 100 Underground, Nielsen is tracking it as a separate series.
Yeah, I did some of the digging into this one to try to figure out why it was ranked the way it was and why it was titled the way it was. I'm not clear as to why Netflix would do this other than to screw with Nielsen, because
I think they're just lazy.
Yeah, but certainly the way Netflix ranks its shows, it knows expressly and to a considerable detail just what episodes and what seasons are doing well. So Netflix has no care as to whether Nielsen is ranking all of these episodes together as one series or not. And yet Nielsen has to cope with the fact that now the show has a different title than it did in season one. But yeah, good work on catching that, Tim, about the fact that it's only four episodes, because then I think there's like three more episodes the following week. Yes. And then the concluding two episodes the week after that.
Yep, exactly.
So 328 million minutes for four episodes of a reality show. Yeah, this one's going to take a hell of a jump next week.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm convinced at this point, whenever Nielsen got around to compiling the data, maybe they, for some reason, why we get these numbers a month later, but maybe when they got the numbers, then someone just, you know, checked Netflix and saw, hey, how many episodes was this show? And then there were, the second batch was up. So they, oh, it's seven. Okay. So that's probably why this is here. So it should say seven next week, but you never know. Maybe they'll still screw up and say it's nine. But after Three Body Problem, this is the most interesting thing I'm looking forward to next week, to see how many episodes Nielsen considers the show to have. We wrap up originals with Halo returning in 10th. It wasn't here the last couple weeks, 295 million minutes, 17 episodes. This is because the second season finale arrived on March 21st. So it definitely got that Super Bowl bump with being advertised heavily on CBS, and people checked it out and then realized it wasn't that great. But then enough people came back for the finale once the whole season was there.
Yeah, without doing huge spoilers, they finally did the flood again. They did the flood once early in season one, and then they forgot about him. And the flood is basically a zombie thing, and it works. And the biggest indictment I can give of this show is they haven't used the flood enough. It would be hilarious, as Raul said, if Sony bought Paramount and then the people behind the PlayStation start showing Xbox's signature video game series. I told Kim that last night, and it was so comprehensible to her. She gave me a blank stare for like 60 seconds while I was trying to explain to her how that was a possibility. It's that unfathomable.
I'm not going to touch that at all, but I will comment on the retention rate of streaming services when it comes to NFL games. David and I had been doing a dive into subscription numbers and retention after NFL football games, and it is strong. Even when the game is not exclusive to a streaming service, and we have seen that on Peacock, where there are NFL football games that are exclusive to Peacock and people subscribe and then they stick around. Now, whether they actually watch anything or not is a different matter, but evidently, according to some subscriber information, those people are still paying months after they had signed up just to watch a football game. So it's no surprise then that after Halo was promoted as heavily as it was during the Super Bowl, the NFL championship game on CBS, that people subscribed to CBS's sister streaming service, Paramount Plus, and are sticking around to watch shows like Halo.
I am curious if we are going to get subscriber numbers from Paramount Plus and Peacock for the first quarter, because there should be, I'm curious about Peacock, definitely. There should be at least a noticeable jump, but not that the Super Bowl or Paramount Plus had anything exclusive, but they do give you the ability to watch the NFL on CBS, and that included the Super Bowl this year. So I am curious to see if they will announce those numbers and if they are significantly higher than previous quarters. Movies is led by Prime Video's Roadhouse, 1.3 billion minutes after arriving on the 21st. So just the weekend number for the remake.
Stating the obvious, it was a huge week for new releases. It really was.
Yes, it was. We have actually one in each category, and more on that in a moment.
Yeah, that's a really impressive number. And I think a lot of the press around this movie and the fact that it actually didn't get released to theaters may have actually helped it.
I never know anymore. Is this something that were they planning on make on a theatrical release and then Prime picked it up? Actually, it apparently played at South by Southwest, but then, you know, even though they already planning this, the streaming release. So yeah, you never know anymore.
Oh no, you are forgetting the scandal here, which is the director of this film, who's Doug Liman, who directed, you know, The Bourne Identity, really, really recognizable director, begged them to release this in theaters. I mean, begged them. Amazon would not hear it. And he basically went public. He went to the press. He spoke to everybody he would, expressed his outrage. And Amazon was just like, oh, isn't that cute? You think you matter. But the it thinks its people argument worked effectively is he got the hint.
Yeah, Doug Liman began production on this movie back when MGM was still an independent operation. And by the time the movie was released, MGM was under the ownership of Amazon. And so, of course, all bets were off at that point.
But yeah, that's a pretty strong debut, especially from something not on Netflix. This is Prime, and yeah, cracking 1.3 billion. So I expect a big drop next week, but that's still an outstanding start for this. Second is Damsel, the top movie of the last couple of weeks, 561 million minutes, of course, on Netflix. Irish Wish hangs on, 546 million minutes from Netflix. And the Super Mario Brothers movie is 362 million minutes. That will, again, remain here as long as it's on Netflix before it goes back to Peacock, and then we don't see it again. Wonka from Max is also still here in fifth, 354 million minutes. Trolls Band Together in sixth, 310 million minutes. This is also, as the Universal release, has the same deal with Peacock and Netflix, where it will be on Peacock for 4 months and then go to Netflix. So check back in August, and we will certainly see this here in probably crushing it, doing way better numbers than it ever did on Peacock. Taylor Swift, the Eras Tour, is down to seventh with 310 million minutes. So a little surprising, but I think we all agree that this is the limitation of Nielsen's tracking, is that this is mainly second screen viewing. You're putting it on the tablet or your phone or something, or and then just, you know, listening to it while doing stuff.
Yeah, and I think its primary audience is probably watching it on their phones, if they're watching it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, I'm certain this is bigger than that. I'm not surprised the drop, but yeah, it's just how Nielsen tracks the stuff. This is only smart TV viewing, as we keep mentioning.
I mean, if we look at it a certain way, it's a 75% drop. And what I mean by that is we only had half a week of data last time, and it was 677 million. Now we have a full week of data, and, you know, it's 310 million. So twice the data getting one half of the results is worrisome, no matter how you slice it. I mean, we can dismiss it as second screen viewing, and that is absolutely what I've done with my writing. That's the evaluation I have of it. But still, I did a puppy dog head tilt when I saw this number. It surprised me.
Moana, also Disney Plus, in eighth, 266 million minutes. Ricky Stenicki from Prime Video hangs on for one more week, 241 million minutes. And new in 10th is Shirley from Netflix, 225 million minutes viewed. This is the biopic of Shirley Chisholm starring Regina King that premiered on the 22nd. Quiet is 9 shows we've seen before, but it's the show that's number one that's most important. This is Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, 1.2 billion minutes for 4 episodes from Max. Of course, this is an HBO documentary series, so that's why it counts as acquired. But I actually kind of expected this, because this is talking about the, you know, Nickelodeon kids shows focusing on, say, Dan Schneider. I work with a bunch of younger people who grew up on a lot of these shows that aired in like the early 2000s, and several of them were talking about watching this. So I am not surprised that it's here, because this is just absolutely horrifying. But people were very familiar with these actors and these shows because they grew up watching, you know, things like The Amanda Show, say Amanda Bynes, all that, Drake and Josh, those sorts of shows. I kind of wish it wasn't this big, but I kind of expected it to be after hearing Cobra workers mention it, which is generally uncommon for them to talk about something.
I'm only going to comment on the fact that this is considered an acquired show because it aired on ID, also known as Investigation or Investigative Discovery. So it is acquired only in the most tenuous of senses, because I believe each episode also aired almost immediately afterwards on Max. It just, again, goes to speak to how arbitrary these charts are and how the categorization of these series is.
Yeah, I always find it funny that you, how much you quibble with these things. And actually, I would have assumed HBO. I have never heard of Investigation Discovery until you mentioned it. So that's why I said that it was HBO. But I guess more people are actually probably watching this on Max than Investigation Discovery. So
I will say that when we pull up Max, it is like the first recommendation. And the interesting thing about Max is you really can't, you know, make it go away like you can on some services. The mere existence of it offends me. This stuff is vile. We've been, you know, throwing, let's call him Fan Biter, under the bus for 25 years now on profits. This is not a surprise to anyone who paid any attention whatsoever. So, you know, I don't want to be watching it now. It's not like the big surprise mystery reveal of you won't believe. Everyone knew. They just looked the other way.
So this is definitely going to hang on with that biggest star, and it may actually take a jump in a couple weeks because this is four episodes. They added one more that arrived on April 7th that won't reflect in the ratings for a couple more weeks, that uses some unused footage from the first four and also features interviews from some of the actors involved. Yeah, look for this one again, but this is quite big, and yeah, of course, it's considered acquired because it's not originally arriving on the streamer, but there you have it. That's very impressive for Max.
And we should add that what they did was pretty vile too. I mean, they would like not tell people what they were actually being interviewed for. They would try and, you know, just sandbag people. Everything about this is loathsome, which makes it perfectly Zaslav.
Yeah, it's all bad. It's terrible, but I know enough people who grew up with these shows, and even though I didn't watch them, I was aware of them. And now you have people, they're older and they're watching this and they're all mortified as well. Bluey's also over a billion minutes in second, of course. And otherwise it's just a bunch of shows we've seen before. But yeah, three big debuts on each chart this week. I was actually pretty excited for these ratings after some kind of meh weeks. And then we still have more Physical 100. We have more Shogun coming. I'm curious to see what happens with Roadhouse and with Quiet on Set. So yeah, it was an interesting week of ratings.
Yeah, and look out in a few weeks because I noticed that Evil is coming to Netflix next week. So yep, and that's before its final season on Paramount. In our green lights and cancellations this week, Apple's on a spending spree, having renewed For All Mankind for a fifth season, as well as ordering a spinoff based on Star City.
The Star City part is the most interesting aspect, in that Ronald D. Moore kind of hinted the fact he expected to get a fifth season of the show. I think that in a lot of ways, it's run out its usefulness, but they did reveal something toward the end of season four, and that was there was basically a Russian equivalent of NASA hidden in the forest that nobody knew about. Star City is going to show what that was like during all of the events we already know from For All Mankind. That's an interesting storytelling opportunity, and I'm excited by that aspect, but I also am afraid it won't be that engaging because it's one of those where all the characters we know are loathsome.
Apple's also ordered a new series based on the book Down Cemetery Road from Slow Horses author Mick Herron. The new series is set to star Emma Thompson and Ruth Wilson.
And in case anybody was wondering, it is a thriller.
Surprise. Over at Prime Video, the streamer has confirmed that Fallout has been renewed for season two.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What? I'm shocked.
And Netflix revealed this week that The Witcher, which just began production on season four, will end with season five.
I was going to say, if you ask probably the people who watched it, it ended with the third season.
Yes. Yeah, for a series to last five seasons on Netflix is a stretch. And so this one was pretty much at its twilight. It actually outlasted its star, Henry Cavill, by two seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was time. As always, we close out with what's been keeping us busy over the last week, and I'm sure that we will talk about Fallout in a second, as I think that David and Tim are going to speak about it, but I'll talk about a book that I finished. It's called Deadly Education by Naomi Novik. It is definitely of the dark academia genre. It's really good. I like a lot of Naomi Novik's books, and this one's no exception. It is set in a school for wizards, magicians, whatever you'd like to call them. And you might think, oh, sounds a lot like Harry Potter. And there is a character who wears glasses and saves a lot of people, but it just happens that our main character is really annoyed by the fact that he keeps saving her. This school is trying to kill everybody. That is part of the point of them going to this school. They have to go to the school and survive it. And there's all kinds of things there that want to eat them, I guess you could say. It's just really interesting, really good. The main character is awesome. She's got just great energy. Obviously, they're teenagers and it is young adult, but it's also, I would say, higher age young adult. Highly recommend it. I'm already on to book two and I will definitely read the whole series. Raul, how about you?
I really want to tell you guys about Ricky Stenicki, but instead I'm going to tell you about how I've binged what's probably 3 months worth of Jeopardy in the period of about a week. Jeopardy's been doing tournament after tournament throughout the season, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that the new season had begun during the writer's strike, and Jeopardy could not secure the services of their writers during the strike for obvious reasons. And so what they did is they brought back a lot of former contestants and, in fact, recycled a lot of old clues for the game. And so what we ended up with was second chance tournaments, which is something that I think a lot of fans of Jeopardy had been asking for years, and we ended up with tournaments where they had brought back contestants who had done very well, but perhaps had been eliminated too early or had lost simply by a dollar. It's frustrating when you see someone who ends up in Final Jeopardy with $40,000 and they lose to the guy who had $40,001. And so bringing back some of those contestants was a nod to the fact that, you know, they were good. They just weren't the best at the time. And that was followed by a tournament of champions and then an invitational tournament to lead into the Jeopardy Masters tournament, which was actually going to be broadcast, I believe, on ABC in May. That one was fascinating because it was an invitational where they actually invited back a lot of former Jeopardy contestants as well as others. The Tournament of Champions had featured for the first time a Jeopardy celebrity tournament champion, so that was interesting. And the invitational actually brought back a couple of people who play the Chaser on the ABC trivia show The Chase, who I had not realized had both been Jeopardy contestants well in the past. So it was great to see all these different people competing against each other. But after months and months and months of tournament Jeopardy, it's become a little bit of a disappointment to get back to what amounts to regular Jeopardy. It's not the best people competing right now. That makes it a little bit less challenging and a little less entertaining to watch. But certainly watching 3 months worth of Jeopardy is a great way to make yourself feel very dumb and inadequate.
All right, Tim and David, let's talk about Fallout.
So I actually haven't finished it yet. I'm a few episodes in, and yeah, they nail the visual aesthetic, and the amount of Easter eggs and references is tremendous for people who are familiar with the games. So yeah, I'm super excited to finish it. We knew it was going to get a season 2 and it was confirmed this week. So I'm all about it. One minor thing is the vaults aren't connected to each other, but other than that, they pretty much nail a bunch of the lore and canon so far.
So what did you think, Kim?
I really enjoyed it. I loved the world building that they did. I think that they have cast the lead roles extremely well. Everybody is great. I'm a big fan of Walton Goggins, and he just kills this role, as he does every role, right? But he's amazing here. I love the back and forth between the past and the present, so to speak. They have built an amazing story, and I kind of hate that we now have to wait for season 2.
It was a little, this is weird considering how familiar I am with the games, and it's very easy to, like, you know, shoot someone's head off and just have them explode or whatever, but apparently every character in this show has the bloody mess perk, because boy, there was a lot more gore than I was expecting. But I know that's just part of the Fallout aesthetic. But yeah, I found that part very funny.
I think it's pretty telling that they went ahead and added the characters to Fallout Shelter which is a game from 2015. Wow. But if you like pull up Fallout Shelter now on your phone, you will notice those characters with their stats listed are available as playable. And that just that says everything. They've known all along they had this. And the application of ideas in it is amazing. And there's something I can't discuss since Tim hasn't seen the end, but you know, we're reading an interview with Jonathan Nolan, and he basically, you know, says, I was playing Fallout 4, mm-hmm. and he basically put 100 hours into the game before, you know, he ever had any idea this would happen. And then when he was planning Westworld, he had his wife come downstairs, who is, she's not a gamer, unlike my wife. I'm blessed in that regard. So he shows her Fallout, and he's like, all right, when we're doing Westworld, here are some of the ideas I'd like to translate, which means, in a way, there's been a kernel of the Fallout television series since before Westworld existed, which is mind-blowing. And you can tell he both loves the games and understands the universe. And so they have actually added something that the makers of the game, Bethesda, have already said is going to be an aspect of the future of the Fallout video game franchise. That's mind-boggling, but that's how much respect we have on both sides of this. Fallout's a masterpiece. It is so much fun. And I'm not saying like it's the best thing you'll ever see, but you will tear through those 8 hours and you will smile a lot.
Fallout is definitely having a resurgence too in terms of the game. Like, I'm a New Vegas guy and I'm pretty close to reinstalling that and updating it. But just this week, Fallout 4, a 9-year-old game, is going to get a current gen update with some new content, just because they knew the show was going to hit. So the timing is amazing. So I'm actually probably going to reinstall Fallout 4 and give that another go when this drops.
And that's the genius of Microsoft right there. I've been telling friends about this. I had not played Fallout 4 in 7 or 8 years. And I loaded it up the other day on an entirely different console. We might actually be two consoles down the road. I don't remember. And it had all my saves ready. And it was like I had just been playing Fallout every day since then. It was amazing. And the other thing I love about the series is when you look at it from a certain perspective, they have three main characters in this. And one of them in character alignment is the good character. The other is clearly the evil character. And then the middle one is the neutral character who can go either way on stuff. And one of the things they do that's really, really clever is, what would you do to get power armor? How much are you willing to sacrifice to be able to do that? And you can hear Tim's laugh because we all know that's a hard temptation to resist, isn't it, Tim?
Yes. Yes. When you get that power armor in Fallout 4, yeah, you're just like, wow, how do I get more? How do I improve this? I need this. Yes.
So I'm really, really excited for what they've done and for what's going to happen. This actually feels like it's going to prove to be the worst Fallout season, if you can believe that.
Having watched the first four episodes myself, I love how they managed to squeeze in all the little Easter eggs from the series without being so necessarily overt about it. And it's hard not to watch the series without framing it in the context of the Halo series. And as much as we go into how bad the Halo series is, it's just night and day. The fact is, when you first meet the protagonist of the series, Lucy, she's sitting in an interview, and as she's introducing herself to the interviewers, you realize, oh, she's basically laying out the stats of her character.
Yes.
As a Fallout nerd, you see that and say, oh, I know exactly what she's doing here. But to anyone else, this is just, you know, this is just how the character is introduced to you in the drama. It plays both ways, and it plays so seamless and elegant. And yet something like that in the Halo series, it'd be like they'd be hitting you over the head with a hammer. It's just so, it would have been so overt and so sloppily done. And yet here in Fallout, it's just so clever. And that's why here I am, one of the biggest Halo fans in the world, and I'm loving the Fallout series so much more.
I'm so glad you made that point, because it's not something I'd consider, but you can hear in our voices. Folks, you don't understand this, but we used to have Friday and Saturday night group Halo games where like 16 or 18 people would show up through the night and just cycle through, and you know, we'd play Halo against each other. For us to diminish Halo as a series hurts us. I mean, it really, really hurts us. You'll notice the opposite is happening with Fallout, where we're just gushing about it. We're euphoric about the fact that they got it right. It's not hard. All you have to do is get people who actually play the games. Jonathan Nolan's 100 hours of Fallout save Fallout. How they couldn't find somebody to do that with Halo, I'll never know.
we talked about it during our 2024 preview, but this also gives me optimism for the Borderlands movie because there's clearly things taken from the game. So it's like, oh, good. The people who worked on this movie played the game. So I'm excited because that was clear from the Halo trailer and that's clear from the Borderlands trailer.
Thank you for listening to Streaming Into the Void. Please consider subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts, and we welcome your feedback. Remember that we're on social media at Streaming Void and online at streamingvoid.com. If you like what you're hearing, please consider becoming a supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/streamingvoid. Be sure to watch for us again next week.